Abba Father, thank you so much for this little gathering of people. Thank you for what you've been working in all of our lives. Today, as we're talking, I want to go over the things that we've understood here, the spiritual warfare from a community perspective. And I ask that you would give me your word. I'm so grateful for the things you have shown me and shown us in our community, and ask that this would be an opportunity to present it in a way that is helpful and encouraging for others as well. So please cover us in all of our different locations and all of the technical aspects that are making it possible to come together in this way. It is in the name of our Messiah Yeshua, Son of the Living God, who is coming again soon, that we pray. Amen and amen.
Amen.
Okay, today I wanted to talk about the importance of Echad in community. You should be able to just watch as I go through here without having to advance the screen. Okay, we'll find out. All right. Today I have four main objectives: to define and apply the concepts of Echad and community, and building on the foundation of our previous teaching. The first are to define and apply concepts of Echad, community, and it's building on the foundation of our previous teaching. Echad is such a broad concept that it's really important to make sure we're on the same page. The second part of our presentation today is reviewing the basic concepts about Yahweh and his creation. Number three is to explore Echad and what it looks like and means individually and corporately. And finally, we'll apply this personal, relational, and corporate maturity model in the context of Echad and community, and the value that it has, the life-giving character that's necessary for Messianic communities to be viable, strong, mature, and have endurance, or stable. Next slide. Part one will be defining and applying concepts of Echad and community building on the foundation of previous teaching, maturity in prayer life, interpersonal relationship skills, and walking out Torah. Next slide. Their various thoughts as to just what Echad means. So in order to make sure we're all on the same page, I would say that we here in Set Apart Ministries understand it to mean a sense of complete oneness with Yahweh, a unity. It's not the same thing as uniformity, but unity. So probably everybody here is okay with unity versus uniformity, right? You know, just want to raise your hands and say yes. Or tell me no if you're not.
Well, I don't plan on dressing the same way everybody else dresses.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So unity but not uniformity is well understood. Good. Within an individual, there's a necessity to find unity or echad with our mind, will, and our emotions, and the way it's expressed through our body, the soul, and the human spirit. And when you have echad with not only the individual internally, but also of the individuals in a group of people, now you've got the individual level and the corporate level of people working together in Echad through the power of the Ruach and the work of the Son. Next slide. Oh, this is a wonderful picture from way back when we had many men dancing at one of our dance workshops. Yeshua expressed this unity as an aspect of his relationship with Yahweh and their desire that we also enter into that Echad with them. For any of you who have participated with worship dance, you know that there is a wonderful thing that happens. There's a very long dance, but when we join together in worship with all of our heart and mind and soul and strength and our physical body as well, there's another sense of unity that is actually physically building up the mind, the will, and the emotions of all the participants as we join closer with the Ruach. Next slide. Why do we teach about the concept of Echad as being important in community for our time? It's our understanding here at SAM that we've been brought together and are being trained up to share what we've learned. So we want to pay attention to his call to speak of these things to his body because we see there's an urgent need for it as we near the time of his return. And I can only say that now in 2014, the urgency of it is far greater than it was in 2006, when we probably did it there with you, Michael, in 2008, when it was put into the PowerPoint point form. As is so often the case, Shaul expressed this call very eloquently. Next slide. Could I have a volunteer to read the first half and then the second half?
I'll read the first half. Thanks, Teresa. The work is to make fully known the message from God, the secret hidden for generations, for ages, but now made clear to the people he has set apart for himself. To them, God wanted to make known how great among the Gentiles is the glorious richness of this secret. And the secret is this: the Messiah is united with you people.
And the second part, in that rests your hope of glory. We, for our part, proclaim him. We warn, confront, and teach everyone in all wisdom so that we may present everyone as having reached the goal, united with the Messiah. Colossians 1:25b-20-28.
Thank you very much. I really think that this speaks a lot to the importance of us working together and being able to encourage and exhort one another, because Messiah is in and with us. Next thing. Our foundational materials here, maturity in prayer life. This is a teaching that we did many years ago. I think there's about 8 ladies on there in a group discussion talking about how life model maturity applies in our prayer life. We use an elder model of leadership, and we specifically evaluate and train people in how to mature through the various levels of maturity using that format. Growing older, I think we all know here, is not the same thing as growing up. So we are using the material from Living from the Heart. Jesus gave you the life model. And in this teaching here, we took the different levels of maturity and applied them to our prayer life. We see personal spiritual maturity as the process by which one comes into Echad with Messiah Yeshua. The discussion format on the CD allowed several members of our community to address the topics of maturity in emotional, intellectual, developmental, and relational areas before we moved on to apply those concepts to our prayer life. The article on our website, which addresses love bonds versus fear bonds as they apply to our faith, is also useful in this discussion. We are not ever intending this material to be used as a format for judging other people, but we do strongly encourage consideration of these topics to evaluate your own spiritual maturity in prayer life, just as we encourage each person in community to address their own overall maturity and spiritual gifts. That Maturity in Prayer Life CD can be found for as a download on our website, and we also have CDs here available for purchase.
You know, that's almost, and I know this is just a little off topic, but, you know, individual's prayer life, you know, indicating, it's almost like the dealing with Arad. It was the individual who was to examine themselves and then come before a Kohen or a priest to be examined, to be double checked, if you will.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for the rest of the community to say, oh, you had a rot. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes that did happen, but the thing is the person was to look at themselves and evaluate.
Exactly. So moving on to the next slide, just as Michael is saying, it is a battle. We know that we will battle within ourselves all the days of our lives with our unsubmitted flesh nature. But because of the finished work of Yeshua, it doesn't have to be a losing battle. So some people promote what they call the worm theology, you know, that, you know, I'm nothing but a worm and I'll never be anything more. We would say that that's really not what Messiah's process is. If we deny that he can be helping us bring our flesh under submission to him, then we're sort of thumbing our nose at him and saying that he's not able to do the work that he said he would do. So even though we know that it's going to be an ongoing battle, as we mature and as we are more fully submitted to him, we're walking the correct walk, the walk of righteousness, and we may fall into sin from time to time, but it's definitely not the same thing as walking a sinful path. Okay, the next slide. Our second teaching that this is based on is the Drama Triangle for Messianic Communities. This is about interpersonal skills and a common pattern of conflict. For those of you who are familiar with Stephen Cartman and Transelsa's script of persecutor, rescuer, and victim that tends to fall into people's behavior without our even realizing it. In this situation, we took that pattern and applied it specifically to things that people find in Messianic fellowships as well as personal family situations. It's one thing to address the struggles within our own mind, will, and emotions, and another to begin to address how our beliefs and behaviors impact other people. Too often we've seen immaturity and unresolved personal issues interfere and even destroy a fellowship. This has been particularly evident when there's no understanding of the kinds of patterns or scripts that are typically played out. By making these hidden patterns more well known, we hope to encourage those in leadership to step up to the plate, and however reluctantly, to recognize that it is necessary for leaders to teach and admonish and exhort when things are playing out in the fellowship that could be destructive. Aaron and company learned this the hard way in the Golden Calf incident. I think is our next slide.
Yeah. Can I comment on that, Barb?
Yes.
The drama triangle. Yes. I just want to say when I learned the trauma triangle concept and actually started applying it, it really changed a lot of how I stayed engrossed in the issue. And when I understood how the drama triangle worked, I was able to take myself out of the pull that the adversary wanted to keep me in, and was able to, in a mature point of view, be able to handle the situation and bring glory back to God instead of being wrapped up in the controversy of life. I found it being very beneficial.
That's good. Thank you, Teresa. Now, when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron had not restrained them, to their shame among their enemies, then Moses stood in the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me." And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. So we know that sheep need shepherds, and people do too. Left to themselves, the behavior of people will generally drop to a lower level, like the lowest common denominator. Maybe out of a lack of knowledge, maybe immaturity or fears or being intimidated, or perhaps personal gain and kingdom building of those seeking personal power. Those are different things, and we've talked a lot about this through the years about how that actually happened, what was going on amongst the people. Okay, so when I read this in the New King James, the people were unrestrained. I found that interesting. But when I looked in the King James, it says the people were naked. Going on to the next screen. Should be slide 12, Michael. Here we go. The King James translated it as naked, so I thought, what in the world does that have to do with leadership? So I have some of the word studies here. Strong's number 6544, transliterated as parah or pra, a pay, a resh, and an ayin, meaning to loosen or by implication to expose. I really like Clark's Etymological Dictionary of Biblical Hebrew, but Clark said that it's losing complete control, to loosen or to disarrange, which I thought gave a better picture of what that was about. Jeff Benner at the Paleo Hebrew, Ancient Hebrew, is number 2641, a verb meaning to uncover, to remove or let go, such as to make naked by removing clothing or uncovering the head. Refuse, uncover, naked, avenging, avoid, go bare, let not, and perish. So we have a little broader picture, I did, of what it means to be restrained or be naked in terms of the leadership and how that leadership didn't happen at that point. We spent some time talking about exactly what it is those people did that prevailed upon Aaron to cause him to do what he did at the time. Moving on to slide 13.
Would that be the same as the Adam and Eve naked in the garden?
That one is a room.
It's a different one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a different naked.
Yesterday, I came upon something pretty interesting. The whole thing with gossip and back talk or you know, kind of thing, is a word Midian, which is also Midianim.
Oh.
Yeah, and it comes from Midianim, I mean, from the even tribe. In one place, it's the same spelling, but there's, because one of them has a missing yod for even the tribe, Midianim.
Uh-huh.
And so it's spelled the same, so is it, The thing is, there's a correlation, it seems like, between Midian, or the Midianim, and the Midianim as in gossip and that kind of thing. So they take advantage or try to move ahead or try to, you know, bring in that drama triangle, if you will, to cause disruption.
Yeah.
Or in a congregation.
And if you align yourself with that, you're aligning yourself with the Midianites.
So the thing is, we need to kill it before it comes into the camp.
Yep, I'm in agreement with you on that. Yeah, that's good connection. Thank you. And Doug?
I just had a question regarding the previous definition of restrained. Are they...
Go back to 12 here, yep.
Yeah. The definition of restrained in this is the definition in the Strong 6544 definition.
Right.
Solution by implication to expose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then the New King James translators called it restrained, which I think makes more sense to us in our modern English. The Aaron failed to restrain the people. And if I go back one more screen.
Okay.
For Aaron had not restrained them to their shame among their enemies. Okay.
Okay.
But the King James said Aaron had let them be naked.
So okay.
I needed to look that up. And it means that there was a lack of control or covering or direction for them, which led to problems. Thank you. Okay. Would somebody please volunteer to read Hebrews 12, 9 to 11?
I can. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But he, for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it.
Thank you. So when leaders lead in a Yahweh-honoring way, the people / sheeple will struggle when they're admonished. But if they remain prayerfully patient, they will be trained up into more fruitfulness for him. And I want to be sure to add, this is not the same thing as an abuse of leadership or heavy-handed control. Moving on to slide 14, the Echad process. We build on the foundation of the previous work to assist the body of Messiah to mature, growing up in every way into Him who is our head. And we do believe that community is a vital part of the process of maturity. Slide 15. But what exactly is a community? Those of you who have looked at our four levels, you're already ahead of me on this. Our thoughts on defining community is that there are many forms and ideas. There's really no clear or consistent understanding that everybody would share. But there is a continuum of descriptions, a whole range of how things are understood as to what constitutes a messianic community or how to walk out Torah in community. When I did the research on this, I was, I don't know if you would say surprised or relieved one way or the other, to find out that even first century halakha differed from one another. And I think people listening know that halakha is the Hebrew meaning the way we walk. So it is how each community lives out or expresses what they understand the word to be teaching us. So we're beginning the discussion of what a community is by comparing and contrasting different elements of community. Moving on to slide 17. What is messianic community? These are our thoughts, the four levels. People who gather occasionally to study Torah, pray and or worship, and enjoy one another's company would be a first level. People who are committed to regular study, prayer, worship, and fellowship, maybe even several times a week, would be level two. People who have chosen to interact together on a regular basis in a Torah-based lifestyle, intending long-term relationships, or in short, their covenant relationship people, that we would call level three. And people who are in covenant relationships and choosing to live in a neighborhood setting of some kind, often called an intentional community. The term intentional community has taken on a sort of a subcultural meaning, and it seems to be used referring to groups that focus on things like the environment or entrepreneurial activities or neighborhood development. So I don't mean it in that secular sense at all. We mean those people who have chosen to live in close proximity so that they can more freely walk out Torah on a daily basis. I do have some materials that refer to intentional community topics and studies, and there's a whole organization, international organization of intentional communities. And I think we can learn a few things from there, but they're not to our pursuit, so we would be a little bit cautious about how we do that. Slide 18. I want to make it clear as graciously as I can that we do not think that occasional group meetings constitute a community. This is because having a social connection with a sense of shared values does not necessarily mean that there is an established commitment. Instead, it's not really formally established. It's very undefined, and it's fluid because people come and go, and there's not really a long-term sense of commitment. I'm not saying that there's not deep shared friendship, but there's not a commitment to work together. So this is a group of independent individuals, but not necessarily interdependent. Is that difference clear to everybody, the difference between being independent and interdependent?
It's Teresa. It's clear because I've walked this, and I've walked out the difference between the two. But for sometimes with larger congregations or people that are starting might not know the specific differences between being independent and interdependent.
Right.
Because being interdependent means there needs to be enough maturity to accept that you don't have a strength in a particular area and you want somebody else to handle something and allow them to do it without micromanaging it.
Yes. That'll be one way to put it. I like to put it on a continuum, too, with independence on one end. You know, me, myself, and I can do everything. Interdependent
yeah.
falls in the middle, whereas Teresa said, I do realize that it works better with other people. We like to say here, we're better, stronger, and smarter together than any one of us is alone, versus dependent on people. In other words, you know, that's where a child is truly dependent on adults, but it's just not, it's not a helpful or a wonderful thing when adults are completely dependent on others. So our understanding is that the interdependent, that middle ground there, that's what Torah is encouraging us.
Yeah.
So if you have an organization, there's a comparison here. The undefined, fluid leadership role, along with the fluidity of people coming and going, or an organizational model, versus an organism, the body of Messiah. And we've clarified that too, that we are not talking about the same kind of hierarchical organizational model that businesses would talk about, but much more the organism of the body of Messiah, where every part has its function and every part deserves its respect. I would say that people who do occasional group meetings, particularly with a gifted teacher, they have some kind of idea of an identity, because they're, you know, I'm a student of that teacher, but it's not necessarily including the kind of shepherding process that they might need.
You know, I don't go to a group here, but I hear about groups here. And a friend of mine, I mean, a group has split up because of people not saying God's name the same way.
People not being what? I'm sorry?
Oh, saying, being one with saying God's name the same way.
Oh,
people
okay.
have walked out. Oh, yeah, it was just really petty stuff.
Oh, and that happens all the time. It's so sad.
It's very sad. And so they made this group, and they said, this is the qualifications you have to be part of this group. And they say, this is how you say the name. You have to have a job. You know, just... things like that. And so because they were tired of people, I guess, being dependent
mm-hmm.
on, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Probably a whole
not.
Lot that could be, you know, evaluated and understood that, you know, maybe they were having kind of a knee-jerk reaction. You know, they don't want people being inappropriately dependent. But instead of helping them grow from where they were to where they need to be, a lot of times people just get frustrated and they cut off. And I don't necessarily think that's always a Yahweh-honoring thing either.
No, it's not. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just kind
but
of...
But on the other hand, if somebody truly is a wolf and they're there intentionally to cause a disruption and the leadership knows that, you know, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, that's a whole different group that I'm telling you about, but yeah.
Right. So you see where I'm going here with the group boundaries, I hope. And Doug said,
right, we can't entertain the enemy. We just can't do that.
No, I'm not talking about the enemy yet, though. I'm just talking
right.
about what kind of structure is or is not there. So
right.
we're not even so far as looking at what is happening as far as hostility or antagonism. I'm just identifying what is in
right.
the group. So, Doug, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment regarding your third entry there, and I want to clarify what you're getting at. You know, an organism / body of Messiah, and I think the body of Messiah is to be sort of like a organic
yeah.
kind of entity that is alive and
yeah.
and living, that honors the Spirit. And I think that's what you're attempting to say or
yeah.
saying
as
there.
As opposed to the hierarchical, you know, we have one leader and then they have leaders under them and then they have leaders under them. That's not the same thing, like elected leaders or something. That's not the same thing as an organism. Well, they'll identify that a little bit more as we continue here. And Michael and Rinska have their hand up.
Yeah. Another thing is, you know, dealing with that organism, you know, I just, you know, like with science, if you look, watch the cellular structure of just a cell and the complexity of a cell, and how things interact with one another within, go in, out, in different parts of it, and yet working together. And it all depends on the situation, you know, what happens and where it goes and how it goes about doing it. And the same way with even an interdependent people. I mean, it's a live organism, but certain things do have certain roles, and we need to understand that, I guess, is my...
Right. And I don't think that we should be disrespectful of people who are at levels of their life that they need more help. Even people who are, you know, 57 or 58 years old, they may have never had an opportunity to learn what it really means to mature. And so, you know, that's up to us to be, I think, tolerant and gracious and teach, not just leave them there or not punish them for being there. So perhaps the most important consideration that we see about the difference of levels is moving on to the next slide, slide 19. Casual or social groups will not experience the same kind of sanctification struggles with the opportunity for growth that is found in a community with clear commitment to one another. People do find it easier to walk away than to mutually resolve differences. And it's hard to understand that struggle can be good. So we really do believe that a lack of relational skills and immaturity contribute to the fragmentation and devouring of one another that Shaul cautioned us against. And next screen, a way to describe that, do these two function in the same way? We can have a group of Yahweh-honoring people who are gathered in one place, like that pile of stones on the left. They're all there. They're wonderful people. They're gathered in one place. But is that the same thing as the group of Yahweh honoring who are built together into a wall? And you see the picture there, how they're fit. There's a function that is now more clear, and each part has its... Okay, next slide, 21. And here is Paul's comment to the Galatians, if I have a volunteer to read.
For brothers, you were called to be free. Only do not let that freedom become an excuse for allowing your old nature to have its way. Instead, serve one another in love. For the whole of the Torah is summed up in this one sentence, love your neighbor as yourself. But if you go on snapping at each other and tearing each other to pieces, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. Galatians 5:13-15.
Indeed.
Boy, is that happening.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But we believe that the process of walking out Torah together provides the necessary interaction, the exhortation, and the accountability that Yahweh uses as part of his sanctification process. Being in a struggle isn't always bad. It refines us and sharpens our focus. But this is what people have so much trouble dealing with, because I'm afraid there's been a history of too much abuse of leadership. So we have two, what I would call, equal and opposite errors of people in leadership. either they're too far away and too much hands off and they don't intervene at all, or they over control and try to manipulate or micromanage, I guess is another way to put it. Neither, what's the expression? We shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We need to strive to find the correct balance for that, because that's part of what will protect us, and that's part of what creates true echad, which Messiah desires for us. Slide 22. After quite some hours of communicating back and forth and tussling through this, our local community came up with, this is our definition of what we want to see in a community, and what we're proposing as our understanding is very helpful for echad and for stability. A multi-generational group of interdependent, like-minded people with a clear, stable identity based in Yahweh. It's mutually defined and articulated as in a growing organism. With structure, authority, boundaries, it is generally based on the recognition of attained maturity and the shared goal of set-apart living in daily interaction. So in short, it's an interdependent network of covenant relationships based in Echad with Messiah. Every one of those terms, I just want you to know, every single phrase there was assessed and discussed in depth. There's nothing that's in there just by chance. I didn't see who came up first, so I'll start at the top. Mike. Lisa?
Okay. Define what like-minded people are.
Like-minded people who are wanting to walk in Torah and honor Messiah.
Okay. So that's just the like-minded, that's their pursuit, that's their goal.
Right. Yes. I don't know how much more than that you can have to start with.
Right.
You know,
because I always say this to my husband, and he's like, he always asks me, well, what's like-minded?
Well, we're talking about the context of Messianic community here. So that's
right.
I'm using that in. Thank you. Michael, Risa?
Yeah, and the previous thing, well, even previous slides, you know, it's something that came up too, is what happened in the community in with our forefathers when they came out of Mitzrayim. You know, there was some backbiting, there was some complaining and grumbling and murmuring, and that was within the community.
Yeah.
I mean, they wanted community, and they did have community then for a little bit when they had the uncontrolled, unrestrained, if you will, went naked with the golden calf incident. And then all of a sudden they were fragmented so much that it was each man at his own tent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, they wanted to be echad, but they were doing it about their way versus Elohim's. And I guess I'm just looking at that and trying to incorporate that into an understanding of, so that we don't make the same mistake.
Exactly. And that's what this whole exploration is about, because our mind, will, and emotions and our interpretations are so important. And if we just assume that everybody interprets everything the same way we do, or they see it the same way we do, we're going to have a mess. And so as we're trying to articulate, that's what we're doing here, is trying to articulate and bring things into the light, that we have a similar language, that we're inviting the Ruach to do what is necessary. 523, what would it look like? Everyone in a community, individually and corporately, pressing on toward the goal of being united in Echad with our Messiah. Slide 24, it's a work in progress. It's a question of building trust among people, with one another, with Messiah. As we're building trust, relationship begins to grow. And both among one another, the horizontal relationships I talk about, as well as the vertical relationship, we need both. Slide 25. When we have a shared vision and we have a shared goal, and I love that they use the bow and arrow, because I'm thinking, I'm seeing Torah there, you know, hit the mark. That's our goal, to hit the mark, to be more like Messiah. But it doesn't usually work out the way people think. Slide 26, the path is unexpected. I think that the people that made this slide probably wanted to convey that the best thing is to have a goal and to move from A to B in a straight line as much as possible. But I submit that when we are mostly about developing relationships because we have a relational God, and we can't be in, we wouldn't know him unless we understand relationships and his desire for relationship with us. It's not necessarily the tasks that are all that important. It's the development of the relationship and how he's growing us. So that path that squiggles all over the place between A and B is kind of like the long path that he's taking to bring each one of us to the place so we can deal with what we need to deal with rather than just accomplishing tasks.
Yeah, and I see the first one as being more reality.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
I wanted to make a comment. I think, you know, your last three slides stayed the same thing, and my observation has been that Enter the Hebrew Roots movement, and really the majority of people that are even in church, have some significant wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And from going from point A to B is not a straight line. It's more of a flight of the butterfly, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, you know, I think there's such woundedness that even if you're coming from a healthy standpoint and you blurt out what's on your mind with no intention of hurting somebody or causing a ruckus, people are not at the point where they can even take that.
Right.
They can't take somebody coming even from a healthy standpoint who expresses what's on their mind.
Yeah,
and
I just
so
wrote
you
about
have,
that in Are You Right Side Up or Upside Down? Because even somebody speaking from a mature perspective, the person who is really at an infant or child level of maturity, they can still in their own head twist that. And if they're
sure.
wounded as well, you know, the twisting is really happens a lot. And we need to find ways to work past that. We just did that yesterday in our community here. We dealt with a situation about 3 weeks ago that needed to be brought into the light, but afterwards discovered that there were some things that happened that hadn't been fully addressed among other people, not the original situation. So we just spent another hour yesterday processing everything that happened all around that original situation. And there were lots of tears, and a couple people realized, oh, I got caught up in the drama triangle. Oh, yeah, I wasn't intending to do that. So it slowed us down in terms of our study ended up being a little bit delayed, but it cemented relationships, and it actually, because where we were in Zechariah, it actually caused us to understand more, again, of what we were reading in the text.
One thing that, you know, this is a good side, because relationship is not an easy thing. It's actually, you know, we try to think of it as something simple, but it really isn't. It's pretty complicated.
Yeah.
And the more people you meet and the more you work with them, you find out how complex, whether it's their upbringing, their environment, or just other little things, you know, but to keep a relationship with somebody, it isn't easy. It's work. And it takes time to work through things sometimes. And
yeah,
it can be really challenging.
Yeah. It's a way too. Yeah.
After 14 years together, we don't do this quite as much recently, but for a number of years, we used to quote to ourselves and to one another, relationships are fun. Relationships are fun. Relationships are fun. Whatever it to help you get through that, because, you know, it is hard. And so, okay, but we're going to laugh about it, and we're going to find our peace even while we're working through the struggles. So I wouldn't ever want anybody to think that it is easy. It's not. But it doesn't have to be destructive if we can continue on the process and be gracious with one another through Messiah in us.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because even with Elohim, you know, and I got to admit, we've been starting to, you know, read that deeper places, and it has some pretty neat stuff in it. And it's like, okay, you know, when I talk to Elohim, I tell him my frustrations. I tell him I'm not happy about some things sometimes, and you know, and but it helps me work through that, I guess. And
yeah,
you know, it brings sometimes tears, or you know, because He knows we're struggling.
And are we not to do that if we have him or want to have him in every aspect of our lives and likewise one another? But he is the most because he's our Heavenly Father.
Right. And our relationship with him isn't a straight line from A to B either.
Right.
You know, we're up and down and all over the place, and he is gracious and still continues to reach out knowing our hearts.
Right, and we'll cry out to one another as well and ask, please join me in prayer about this brother or sister and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Or we might have the Irish swings.
Okay, moving on, slide 27. But how is Echad a central concept to the strength, maturity, and endurance of a messianic community? Plan 28, commitment. A key element to the viability and health of any faith-based body of believers. Another thing that we've done in SAM is our kind of motto has been pray, stay, and don't run away. So when somebody is cut or hurt or wounded by something that's happened, we have encouraged them. There's a teaching called the VLEs, the Verbal Logical Explainer, which is one way of looking at how past experiences get reinterpreted into the present. And so if something that happens now, the way somebody says something or the expression on their face trips the memory in you of somebody in your past who behaved badly towards you and you were hurt and that's unresolved, all of that emotion from that past experience gets loaded into the present without your even being aware that it's happening. As far as you're concerned, it's that person you're looking at right now who has caused all this pain. So it's kind of like billing somebody in the present for abuse that happened in the past. And the tendency for most people is to cut and run at that point. And they take pain and they go away, but then they've just added on to it. So that the next time there's some opportunity to develop a relationship, something goes wrong and boom, there they are. They're off running again. So for us, that's why that building of trust and relationship is there, and it takes time. I don't see how it can happen quickly, particularly with our community, starting with so many with really severe trauma. We have probably a balance now of people with more normal trauma and some with severe trauma. But the idea of pray, stay, and don't run away is look to Messiah for his strength, for his unity, and have the commitment enough to trust that the other people have your well-being in mind, however it may have seemed to come across to you. So that's a lot on a short topic, but I think maybe you were all on the same page there too. Slide 29.
I guess when I think about commitment, what comes to mind is a passage out of the love chapter, you know, 1 Corinthians 13. Mm-hmm. It says, love rejoices in the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately that's what the Messiah is attempting us to mature into is the truth, because it will bring maturity, and that's which he defines as setting us free.
Right, and maturity is be perfect, be tahor.
Be complete.
Tahor.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's what we're looking for. And I really don't understand how anybody can have that ability to help one another and exhort unless there is some degree of commitment in the relationship.
And I would define commitments as a desire for the truth. And I think that, you know, within
that's
that.
That's one way to define it, but that's not the only way.
Okay.
The commitment has to do with being not only committed to the truth, but also being committed to the relationship and to stay present and to stay vulnerable with somebody. Does that make sense?
I don't see where it's inconsistent.
Oh, it's not inconsistent at all. It's just a different way to say it. Because truth,
okay.
When you commit a commitment to truth, that's sort of an abstract concept. I mean, you can't look at truth. You can't hold on to truth. It's an abstract mental construct. But the commitment of being in relationship with one another and choosing to stay in relationship with one another, you know, through the good, the bad, and the ugly, that's a commitment that is, there's a tangible aspect of that. I stay here in the flesh to work out my concerns with you, to exhort and to encourage one another. That is what I'm talking about in commitment. And ultimately, yes, truth emerges.